Good afternoon, everybody. Happy Wednesday. Welcome to episode 17 of The Drop Set. My name is Darren Starr, your host. Thanks for joining us. Everybody out there in Facebook land, we are broadcasting this live as well with some really, really bright and washed out video. Yikes. It looks a little rough, but that's okay. That's okay. So do I. This will also be on YouTube soon as well. So lots of ways to watch. You can listen through iTunes, Google Play. You can listen directly off the website. We got all kinds of stuff, all kinds of ways to hook you up. So lots on the agenda today. So I'd say let's just dive in. So if you are watching out there in Facebook land, you can see I am broadcasting from the new Five Star Physique headquarters from the basement of our house in Knoxville, Tennessee. The decor may leave a little to be desired. You can see behind me, over there is the, that's like the TV area. So we've got our big ass TV up above the fireplace over there, also known as the Game of Thrones den. Way back behind me, you can see we have our band practice space set up. We've got our little PA back there, my keyboard, couple of mics for the singers, etc. Shopping for a drum set to fill that out as well, just so we have some house drums, because one of our bands is searching for a drummer currently, and we thought, hey, you know what? It might entice somebody to come play drums with us if we had a house kit, so they didn't have to lug something around here every time it's time to practice. So, and then we've got the whole office set up here, and then back over there, I got a full bathroom and then also a little wet bar, which is actually my supplement station. So the wife is very happy that all of my potions, as she calls them, don't have to be in the kitchen. So anyway, this is it. So I need to work on a little bit of decor, maybe change the setup for next time. But nonetheless, here we are. So let's get down to it. We have a few topics I want to cover today. There was, I meant to pull this up before I started recording, but there was an article that a client shared with me about it was on the New York Post, and it was an article, here we go, yeah, this was from August 14th. This was just about a week and a half ago. The subject is bodybuilder mom dies from too much protein before competition. So stop me if you've heard this before. You're a bodybuilder. You're going about your business. And everybody invariably says, you're doing too much. You're working too hard. You know, you're doing this. You're doing that. Suddenly, everybody's a fucking professional when it comes to you following your plan. People that, you know, may not go to the gym at all, never followed a diet, but you know what you're doing, you know, it's just too hardcore. Basically, you know, it's code for stop making me feel bad about the fact that I'm not doing what you're doing. And it's all on them. It has nothing to do with you. In this case, this was something that was a little bit different. So this woman who was 25. She had a disorder, urea cycle disorder, which makes it difficult for her body to break down protein. So it said it can lead to fatal levels of ammonia in the bloodstream, excessive fluid in the brain. So the cause of death was ruled as intake of bodybuilding supplements. So I guess if you consider food a bodybuilding supplement, that could be correct. And to be clear, you know, I don't mean to make light of the situation at all, but what this does is it plays into the fears and the lack of understanding that a lot of people have when it comes to bodybuilding, what we do. And so I'm a little concerned about it in that sense. You know, it's tragic, of course, because it doesn't look like, I mean, you know, certainly I don't have her plan in front of me. It doesn't look like she was doing anything extreme or anything like that. It's just her body was, you know, I think unbeknownst to her, not ready for it. So if anything, you know, I would say this might be a good cautionary tale to, as they say, always check with your physician before starting a diet or exercise program. At the same time, this was a rare disorder. I have a hard time believing that a routine visit to the doctor would have discovered this. So I'm not sure if she was suffering from symptoms or anything like that that may have contributed to may have been a warning sign. Maybe she ignored those. I'm not sure. You know, but nonetheless, it's sad. It's tragic, and you know, it's really it's unfortunate because it does also feed into what a lot of people already think about bodybuilding, that it's too hardcore. If you follow a plan, you're just, you know, you're being reckless with your body just because you. You know, you want to, you know, look a certain way, which, you know, God forbid. And also, you know, on that note, we can't really comment on that without also saying a word about Dallas McCarver, who passed away just within the last 36 hours or so, I believe. He was in prep for the Olympia, training for that. You know, I watched a couple things on YouTube yesterday trying to break down what happened with this. And, you know, he was... I think he was in studio with Aaron Singerman actually like the day beforehand. They were very tight. They were very close. And, you know, I watched Aaron's video on that and, it was, you know, you could tell it hit him. It was unexpected. I mean, I don't really want to speculate. I will just relay what has been, noted by other people and that it seemed like it was choking related. Like, you know, food. So something very benign and mundane. You know, I don't know if more information will be coming out about that. I actually haven't checked today. There may be more details. But really it's just, you know, it's a big loss, for the bodybuilding community. Whenever we lose one of our own, somebody with, you know, his kind of, you know, potential, I mean, he has succeeded at all, but the absolute highest level. And he was heading there, in just a few short weeks. So, very sorry to see him go. I had the pleasure of watching him. He came to the gym where I was training once. I just saw him and his, you know, cadre of people come in, and, they were going through a workout. I didn't even notice at first, not because I was so in the zone, but just because I'm Captain Oblivious in the gym. And a guy that I know, he comes up to me and he says, quote, and I will never forget it, "Is that Dallas fucking McCarver over there?" And I look, I'm like, "Oh, sure enough. Yeah, it is. It is. Okay. I'm no longer the biggest guy in the gym. Not by a damn long shot." So that was, it was cool though. It was cool. So he will be missed. Absolutely. Moving on, you know, there's no way to transition gracefully from that to anything else. So we will just do it with as little grace as we possibly can. Last week's poll on the website, I was asking, how many days per week do you train legs? I gave a few options, 1, 2, 3 or more. I also wanted to add 0, but the poll thing for my website, if I give a poll option of 0, it assumes that means it's an empty answer, so they wouldn't let me put that up. In retrospect, I should have typed out Z-E-R-O. That probably would have worked, so I thought that would have been fun. Basically nobody said they trained legs once a week, which I think is interesting. So the votes were split between 2 and 3 or more. Twice a week got 71%, 3 or more actually got 29% of the vote. So kudos to you. I should have also been able to, should have broken that down and said, you know, are you male or female? Because there are probably very few guys who train legs 3 days a week. So there will be later today a new poll up on the website. This time I am asking, since I've already written it, last week when I recorded this, I didn't have it. I had to still come up with the topic, but this week it's already been written. So what I'm asking is, when I go into the gym, and your options are have a plan, I wing it, or I go in there to meet with my trainer. So I'm just curious, you know, how many of you actually walk in there with a set plan that you know what you're doing? You've got, you know, the exercises, your set and rep schemes all figured out ahead of time. If you've got maybe some tempo already established that you want to follow during the workout, or if you go in there and you're like, oh, what am I going to do today? Well, I'm just going to go around to whatever equipment is open and use that. Or, you know, some people, you know, they've kind of worn a path on the carpet in the gym where, you know, they're always following the same path for the same routine. So, and then, you know, if you go in to meet with a trainer or something like that. So go to 5starphysique.com. That's star with 2 R's, 5 spelled out, and cast your vote there. Let your voice be heard. I haven't done a rant in a while. You know, there was the podcast a couple weeks ago where I was basically the whole thing was a rant. I'm not counting that because a rant should be short. That was me ranting about how the NPC organizes and conducts their shows and how sucky it is for those competing, for those attending, and for those coaching. It is a shit show. It is awful. NPC, if you're out there, if you're watching, I'm looking straight into the camera here. Please do something about it. It is awful. I have a client competing in an OCB show this weekend, and they are doing, they've got a much better structure in place where they have the calendar events already posted. She's doing figure. So, you know, they're going to go on around 1:10 for judging. And then their finals presentation actually starts at 3. So she knows when she's going to be due on stage. And, you know, they say about 3. So, Anyway, I'm digressing. My rant for this week, I'm going to turn this one around. The subject of this week's rant is this guy. I recently joined a new gym in town, and the rant is about why I took so damn long to do it. Because from before this place was open, I was told that this was a bodybuilder's gym. For sure. The atmosphere was going to be different. The equipment was going to be, you know, what bodybuilders want. They're not trying to get people to sign up based on how many pools they have or all their group fitness classes and stuff like that. So, you know, they don't have saunas, etc. It's a bodybuilder's gym. So it's a gym. You go there to lift. I held off just because I'm like, whatever. You know, it's out there. It'll take me an extra 5 minutes to get there every day. So, Darren, I'm looking at you right now. I'm looking at me in the camera. You're a dumbass, and you should have gone there a long time ago because it is awesome. So it's Armor Gym in Knoxville. Great place. I have no affiliation with them other than the fact that I go there. The equipment that they have really is top notch. So pretty much everything I could have ever wanted, except I have noticed they do not have an anterior tibialis machine. So I think I can make do without that. They actually have an assisted glute ham raise machine, a weighted sissy squat machine, several varieties of leg press. They've got the Strive plate loaded leg extension and leg curl machines, which are awesome because they allow you to overload either the mid range, the beginning, or the end range of the range of motion. It's awesome. And they got just everything you could want. Very cool stuff. Very adjustable. So anyway, that's the rant. I'm a moron. I waited too long. I should have gone there a long time ago. So so we've got two main topics that I want to cover this week. So how are we doing on time here? Come on, Darren. Keep on track. Keep on track. Okay, we're about 12 minutes in. We're doing good. So both of these, I'm flying without a net on both of these. Oftentimes, I like to outline this just to make sure that I hit all the bullet points, but I've talked about these at length with clients many times, so I feel pretty well versed on these. The first one that I want to talk about is strength versus size. Training for strength versus training for size. Are they different? Can you do one without the other? How should they be different if they are? And, you know, spoiler alert, they're very different. This is coming from a guy who has never in his life dedicated a significant stretch of training to strength training. I've always trained for hypertrophy. And, you know, to be fair, that may be to my detriment. So I think more variety in my training would be good. And I could benefit from hiring a coach that would get me out of my comfort zone and get me to do things that I don't necessarily want to do, but I need to do. So, But the modalities for training are very different. So if you're training for strength, your goal is to move weight. If you're training for size, your goal is to fatigue the muscle. And I can't really break it down any more simply than that. If we're doing a bench press, first of all, if you're training for strength, a barbell bench press is really, people equate training for strength to powerlifting, and that's fair. The barbell bench press is your powerlifting equivalent there. You could do a dumbbell press in a strength training program as well. I mean, of course, you can do any exercise, but typically, I do program a lot of strength work for clients. We'll go through dedicated long stretches of, several months focusing on strength training in the off season for some people. Based on your physique, your individuality, it may or may be more or less appropriate. But if you're doing a barbell bench press as part of a strength program, your goal is to, progressively through an intelligently designed program, put up more and more weight through basically whatever means necessary. Obviously you're going to be using, the shoulder, you're going to be using the chest, you're going to be using the triceps, your main movers, you're going to be engaging the core, you're going to be kind of pushing from the back so your back will be engaged as well. It's basically, while it is a bench press, it's a whole body lift for the most part. Now, if we are training for size, why do we do a bench press? Well, we do it to target the pecs. So everything else be damned, don't worry about how much weight you're moving. Worry about how much you're fatiguing the pecs. That's what's important. So the way that you set yourself up on the bench is going to change significantly. The grip that you use will change probably a good bit. The way you treat the bar when you hold it will probably be different as well. Certainly the weight is going to be significantly different. If you're training for size, you're never going to want to go as heavy as you can, certainly not all the time. It might be fun to max out every now and then, but you know, if you're going as heavy as you possibly can, you are doing that at the detriment of muscular fatigue. You know, you're turning it into a brute force, whole body kind of exercise, which, you know, time to time can be fun. That can't be the basis of your training, though. That's the big difference between training for strength and training for size. The two are not mutually exclusive. You know, you can be a big and strong dude, but I think it makes the most sense to not try to train for both at the same time. Because if you do, your improvements and increases in either one of those columns is going to be slower. And for a lot of people, for some people, that's okay. They can roll with that. Most of us, though, we want to see a more pronounced increase. You know, we want to see something grow. We want to see the numbers go up. So if you dedicate and throw yourself into one of those versus the other, it's certainly going to be more effective. You know, if you go all out into a strength phase, especially if it's, you know, for example, your first time doing it, you're going to see huge increases right off the bat, just because there are several things that go into strength training. You know, it is first and foremost largely a brain exercise. It's training your neural firing patterns to basically learn how to do the exercise more efficiently, understanding that it is a skill and your skill at that exercise needs to develop. So initially, when you first start doing, you know, a squat, a deadlift, a bench press, an overhead press, whatever else might be in your strength training program, it's your skill development that leads to the increase in weight. Not that your raw strength output is necessarily increasing. It is, but that's not accounting for nearly as much of the increase in weight that you're going to experience. So just by hitting the lift more frequently, studying your form and trying to improve it, that number, you know, the weight that you're capable of doing, you know, for in a strength program, you're rarely going to try and just hit your one rep max all the time. You know, there are different, many different programs to go, to many different programs you can follow. But a constant one rep max effort, no, that's a bad idea. That's not a good way to approach it. But you're going to see those numbers go up for sure. If you are, also a key component to a lot of strength programs is accessory work. So that's a chance to, not go just raw strength, like that's a component of your workout, but then you're training for accessory as well, because you're trying to grow the muscle, because if it's larger, it's capable of more output as well. And if you're doing those two things in concert with one another, you're growing the muscle and then you're learning more effectively and more frequently how to get that muscle to fire. So when it's larger, there's more of it to fire, so you're able to put more weight up. So when I do strength programming, I do favor things that focus more on accessory work. Something like a small off program where there's little to no accessory work, it has its benefits, but it's you know, frequency and just, you know, overload basically. So your skill development is there, and that's where a lot of the improvement from that comes in. It's one of those things where, you know, you follow the program and one of two things happen: you either get stronger or you die. So maybe overstating things a little bit, but you'll feel like you die basically, and it will crush your ego. So that being said, I do tend to favor the ones that have accessory work, just because, hey, first and foremost, I'm a bodybuilding coach. I do strength programming as well, but you know, I think even during strength work, we should have a focus on aesthetics. You know, I don't train a lot of power lifters who look like refrigerators, those big dudes that are basically just rectangles. You know, they're great power lifters, but they aren't my clients. Nothing disparaging against them, but certainly it's not... not the kind of programming that I typically favor. Definitely when you are doing a strength phase, though, you do want to eat more. But hey, buddy, what you doing? Oh, he feels bad for interrupting the podcast. Sorry, dude. that's my dog. That's Taz. Come say hi to the camera. No, he's not going to do that. You can kind of see him there. Hey, buddy. He's a good boy. You distracted me, buddy. you've got to eat when you're on a strength program. You know, I've worked with people who they'll state their goals and it's kind of ambiguous, and part of the thing that I do when I first start working with somebody is really kind of flesh that out, say, okay, what's really important? So you want to focus on strength, you want to focus on fat loss, and you want to work towards a competition as well. let's prioritize those things because you can't do all of them at the same time. You know, doing a strength phase while you are doing a ton of cardio at a caloric deficit is going to be a really shitty strength phase. So pick your battles, learn how to phase things, understand that, you know, when you're in competition prep, getting ready for a show, you're probably going to experience a little bit of a strength dip. So it's not the time to focus on your numerical output necessarily. But once the show is come and gone, it can be a great way to, you know, you kind of get past that post-show rebound a little bit. It can be a great way then to work into an off-season program where, you know, you're trying to gain strength, you're trying to gain size, especially if it's something that you care about. And for me, you know, it's not something that I've ever cared about. I don't care how much I can squat. I don't care how much I can deadlift. The weight is irrelevant to me. So that's one of the reasons I've never really been drawn to a strength program. It's just, I don't care. And it's hard for me to invest myself in something that I don't care about. So but similarly, sometimes I try to convince my clients that it's the best way to go. But again, if I get some pushback from them, like they don't care either, I can tell it's not going to be a program that really works for them. So, because you've got to care in order for it to be effective. Now, that's strength and training for size. I've talked about this before, so I'll be relatively brief. You know, it's all about generating as much muscular fatigue as you possibly can. The weight that you use to do that is largely irrelevant. I say largely just because there has to be enough weight in there. There has to be enough resistance to help generate that fatigue. You know, if you just do isometrics all the time with no weight, great. But you know, you've got to have a little bit of resistance in there. So, I will always push, you know, form above all else. Now that's true for powerlifting and for strength training as well. But as I mentioned earlier, the form, if you're doing a bench press for strength versus a bench press for size, the form is going to look very different, but still whichever camp you fall into, it needs to be precise and that form needs to be placed above all else. So training for size, the form comes first. And then also the tempo becomes important in powerlifting. You want to maintain a steady tempo. But, you know, the goal is not to do a slow lift. The goal is to be explosive, get that weight up, or, you know, push the weight down or whatever, get up from the hole, et cetera. So for bodybuilding, though, maintaining more muscular tension is the goal. So take things nice and slow. Your rest periods should be shorter. You know, you don't need to take 3 or 4 minutes between sets. And if you say like, that's ages, I've never done that, time yourself. Next time you're in the gym, see how close you get to that. If you're not doing a strength phase, I think you might surprise yourself. If you don't really monitor your rest breaks and how long they are, I think you might be surprised how quickly 30 or 45 seconds can go by. Especially, God forbid, if you start talking to somebody, or even worse, if that creepy guy in the gym comes up and starts talking to you, then suddenly 15 seconds will probably feel like 5 minutes. But training for size, it's about tempo, it's about muscular fatigue, it's about quality of contraction. You know, the goals on a repetition for strength and a repetition for size, a set for each one, a workout for each one, are very different. I always tell people who may be accustomed to training for size, for hypertrophy, when we transition into a strength program, I always have to tell them the goals here are going to be very different. You know, our determining factors for figuring out if we were successful in a session or not, it's going to be very different. It's not about crippling your body and, you know, leaving leg day in a wheelchair or anything like that. That's not what we want. You're going to be tired. You're going to be fatigued. But our main success is we went into this strength training workout with specific numerical goals. Did we hit them or not? That's what it comes down to. So it's very different from bodybuilding. But a lot of people will approach bodybuilding or training for size very much from a powerlifting mentality. Like it's all about how much weight you're able to lift. But I will admit there is a certain appeal to that just because of the way that our brains are constructed. It's easier to break that kind of stuff down. And I will tell people all the time, you can't rely on those quantifiable things so much. You've got to kind of go by feel. You need to track certain variables, and I've talked about that at length before with workout logging. I've written blog posts about that as well. You need to track certain variables, but ultimately, you know, you're doing that to develop kind of a baseline for performance, but then beyond that, you just kind of need to go by feel and not be afraid to push yourself well outside your comfort zone. So hopefully that clarifies. I had, you know, a a client who just started a strength training program, and he commented on how it was different, and you know he was researching some stuff, and he found some information that he thought was questionable in a I think it was a mensfitness.com article. So I always feel good, like I'm kind of doing my job when a client will go and research something, and then their BS detector will go off, and they'll send it to me, and they're like, "Am I right here?" And I'm like, "Yes, awesome, I like that." So it's great. They also said one of the things that they said, and this is an interesting note for deadlifting, to build up your deadlift, was stand on some plates. Which what you're doing there is you're performing a deficit deadlift. It changes the exercise. And there's a school of thought that says, you know, the only time you deadlift from the floor is at a meet. Other than that, when you're training, you always do a deficit deadlift because a deficit deadlift is harder. So if you can deficit deadlift 315, then when you take those plates away and you do a deadlift from the floor, suddenly 315 is going to feel like 255 because you're accustomed to pulling from a lower position. But it and so there's some validity in that. Now they were encouraging things like it sounded more like a 4 or 5 inch deficit, which for most people is just a really bad idea. I think that's reckless advice. I would never give advice like that as a blanket statement. Like, this is what you should do. You've got to look at somebody's mechanics and see what's appropriate. Typically, like, a 2 inch deficit is great. I did see something at the gym the other day, though, that I thought was funny, speaking of standing on plates. So there is some validity in putting plates under your heels when you squat. So it elevates your heel. It shifts things forward a little bit and puts a little bit more emphasis on the quad, especially if you're doing a front squat. It can be really great for that. I've done it. You know, I actually did it today with Romanian deadlifts, actually. So it helps get that stretch in the hamstrings when you do that. I'm talking like 10-pound plates, something that's, you know, like an inch or so. So not anything, you know, tremendous, you know, not anything huge or anything like that. But the one thing that I saw in the gym the other day, this was a couple weeks ago actually, that was funny, is somebody was trying to do that, but instead of putting their heels on the plate, they put their entire foot on the plate. So they were basically just standing an inch above the ground and squatting. And it took every fiber of my being not to go over there and say, "What the hell do you think you're doing? You're making yourself taller and then you're squatting, but you're not changing anything. I mean, your foot is flat on that plate. I mean, just think about it for one damn second, please." I was actually getting angry just at the stupidity being demonstrated here. I'm like, what does that do? In what universe does that seem like something that's reasonable to do that's going to change anything at all, other than maybe change your perspective? I don't know. It was odd. So under the heels, yeah, there's some validity in that. Or even under the toes, you know, if you want to shift things back a little bit, you could do that. It's less common just because for most people that creates a balance issue. But flat footed, standing on plates, I mean, just, you know, think about it for a second. Okay, so that's strength versus size. So the other topic that I wanted to cover here this week is a big one. And I've actually been giving this talk to a lot of people lately. So if you're one of my clients and you've heard me give this speech before, you can just go ahead and sign off right now. But the topic is stress management, and it's worth, I just saw it. Somebody, the number of eyeballs watching this video just went down. So I think somebody took me literally. So we're talking about stress management here. And it's a big topic. Hold on. My chair keeps sinking. It's a big topic just because stress impacts everything. And for some people it's really clear, some people it's less obvious, and I'm not sure why that is. I think some people might just be a little bit more intuitive, and sometimes it's just easy to know when you're stressed. Sometimes, however, it's a little trickier. Like, you know, you may not realize that all these things are adding up, but I always make the analogy of stress being like either a bucket or a balloon. So there are good types of stress and there are bad types of stress. So the good types of stress would be, you know, the short-term stress of following a caloric deficit if you're attempting to lean out. You don't want to do that long-term for, you know, years on end, because that's going to create problems. But, you know, for something that's, you know, a few months long running at a deficit, great. That creates a little stress in the body. That's what causes the body to change. The stress of physical exertion caused by a workout is great stress. That is stress that we want. That's stress that we want to maximize, actually, because that is potential for growth. So that's great. Now, other kinds of stress, financial stress, family, relationships, work, etc. If you have a dog that keeps peeing on the carpet, Bella, I'm looking for you. Where are you? Okay, she's asleep over there. you know, any kind of stress like that could certainly do the trick. The problem is that all of that stress goes into the same place. And so if your, here's the analogy, wait for it. If your bucket overflows or if your balloon pops, that's bad. And that's the breaking point for people. So that's no good. And so that's no good. Understatement of the year right there. It's not a place where you want to be, for sure. That's when you start to feel these things like, you know, blood pressure rises, just inexplicable anxiety, lack of sleep, lack of appetite. I've certainly been there before, you know, in the past, you know, not to get too deep into the weeds and turn this into a therapy session or anything like that, but past relationships, you know, when they would turn south, I would find myself in a place where it's like, you know, a week, 2 weeks go by and I can barely eat anything at all. And it's stress. I mean, you know, your body responds to that stuff and it's a very real thing. And to deny or kind of downplay the impact, to minimize the impact that that can have on your body is dangerous. But it's also, it's counterproductive because your body is giving you warning signs, albeit in a very not useful kind of code, but it's giving you the signs that, hey, you got to fix something here. So get off your ass and fix it. So what I like to equate is, you know, that's when the water is boiling. So what we need to do, the first thing is we don't need to get that water back down to room temperature, but we need to get it to stop boiling and just get down to kind of a more aggressive simmer. And one thing that can be really helpful for that is a cortisol blocker. So cortisol is your stress hormone. So as you get stressed, those levels go up. And what we need to do is kind of something to bring them back down. Now, a cortisol blocker is not the end all be all silver bullet of solutions for this. And certainly long term, it's not going to make a dent. But in the short term, it can be that thing that gets your water to stop boiling or your blood to stop boiling and turn the temperature down a few degrees. So it can be helpful for that because if you can just get out of that boiling stage, suddenly, you know, things will normalize a little bit. You can feel a little bit more in control, a little bit normal. Your brain slows down a little bit. It's just a little bit of a boost. You know, sometimes people just need a little bit of a push to get moving on that. And a cortisol blocker is something that can really help with that. So I think pretty much any commercial product that you find for that over the counter is going to have the same basic ingredients. So pick that up, follow as directed. Now, ultimately, though, what it comes down to is you've got to identify what the stress factors are and then deal with them at the source. So this is the part of the job where, you know, becoming a coach also becomes a little bit of a therapist, because this has a huge impact on people's not only ability to follow a diet, but their ability to be focused in their training, their ability to wake up rested and go hit their cardio in the morning. But it can also affect how all of those things impact your body. I mean, if you're able to still hit all the nuts and bolts and, you know, check all the boxes and do all the stuff that you need to do, if your stress levels are higher and that cortisol is spiked, it's all going to have less of an impact. So being able to mitigate things a little bit and then manage the sources of the problem is going to help. So it's all about compartmentalization. So there's a few things to talk about here. Let's say you're in a place where, and this is very common, where, you know, you can still do the stuff. You know, you go to the gym, but you feel like you're going through the motions because you're kind of distracted or whatever. It's like, oh man, you know, I have here, hold on. I didn't plan on turning this into a, I didn't plan on turning this into a, prop affair, nonetheless, a couple months ago, I got a letter from the IRS. So talk about stress factors right there. Anything from, and it's a thick envelope, like it's several pages, and there's like a return envelope, so they're awaiting a response. So before I even read it, I'm like ready to like dry heave and throw up. And it basically says, hey, Darren Starr, so we got your 2015 tax returns. We're looking at that, and we think there's an error in here, and we think you actually made more money than you reported. And initially, I'm thinking, oh, shit. You know, I mean, I thought I was accurate with everything, but, and I looked through the records and everything, and sure enough, I mean, when I was putting in the information on my 1099s, I, you know, I don't remember if I transposed a couple numbers or where the number that I got was off, but it was off. I had underreported and it was accidental. I know you're all out there like, yeah, sure, it was accidental. It was, you know, scouts honor, hand to God, it was accidental. It wasn't off by a tremendous amount, but it was enough where it's like, oh, this is going to lead to me having to pay some extra. So, I started off, my first tactic was to go into a dark room and cry. And then I decided that I was going to just eat everything I could possibly find. But I stopped myself before then, because I've been down this road before. You know, I've talked with people about this many times, and I decided to apply it to myself. So I'm like, Darren, okay, we'll do the dark room and cry step. We can do that. We can get that out of our system. And then we're going to tackle this shit head on. So that's when I pulled up my records, and I just took whatever action I could. So, and in this case, it was, you know, printing out the documentation that I had, showing them what I had, and really all they needed was confirmation, like, you know, do you dispute this or what, you know? And I think it was actually what it came down to was, you know, they said that I had made X, but that I had reported zero, which was, I don't know where they got that. And so I sent the thing back. I'm like, no, I didn't report zero. I reported this, which, oops, it wasn't what I was supposed to report. That's where the honest mistake came from. But I'm like, okay, put this in the mail, send it off, etc. And, you know, okay, at that point, I did my best to put it out of my mind. Like, there's nothing else I can do on that. So I'm not going to let this ruin the next, you know, several weeks until I hear back from them while I'm stressing about this. So compartmentalization. This comes back to something that I read in the book was 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. They talk about creating a sphere of concern and a sphere of influence. So over here, the sphere of concern, this is all the stuff that you worry about. And over here in the sphere of influence, this is all the stuff that you actually have the ability to do something about. Where those overlap and coincide is where you direct your action. That's where you put your effort. And that, you know, continuing to think about that and reminding myself of that all the time, it really just lets you let go of things that are out of your control. So, you know, at that point, my sphere of concern was IRS crap, having to pay, you know, extra money in taxes. I don't want to do that. You know, is this going to make me get audited down the future? Is this putting me on some kind of list? You know, do they think I'm a terrorist now? Whatever. I mean, who knows where my head was going. And then over here, my sphere of influence, what I can do, okay, I can respond to their thing, overlap, and that's what I did. I responded to their thing, and then it was just out of sight, out of mind. I forgot about it, actually, until this letter came 2 days ago. Amount due, zero. Thank you for your response to the notice we sent about your taxes. We're pleased to tell you that the information you provided resolved the issue in question and that our inquiry is now closed. Hallelujah. So that was great news. So it's not always going to turn out like that, but it was a happy ending for me. So managing, compartmentalizing, sphere of influence, sphere of concern, only direct your energy. Your energy is valuable. It's one of the resources you have that is not infinite. So spend it wisely and put it where you need, where it needs to go, where it can be most effective. The other way in which compartmentalization can help you is by, you know, you go to the gym and you find yourself in this situation where, you know, you're just kind of going through the motions. You're doing a workout, but you're just distracted, etc. Think about this. Compartmentalize. You go there. You know this is something that's important. You've established a goal. You want to work towards this goal. This is a critical phase in working towards this goal, the effort that you put in during these workouts. I know, you know, you do enough of them. You do 300 of them a year or whatever. So, you know, you have a few crappy ones, whatever. It's not the end of the world. No, it's not the end of the world, but if you can minimize that and have fewer crappy ones, you're going to make more progress. So the big thing is, you know, you've invested the time to go to the gym. You've blocked out the next hour anyway, so you know you're going to be here. Make the most of it. You know, spend a minute at the start of the workout just focusing on breathing, clearing your head, and putting yourself in a space where you're envisioning what this workout's going to be like, and forget about the other stuff. If something kind of creeps into your head, just, you know, nope, get out. This is not your time. I'll have plenty of time to worry about you once this workout's done. But for right now, this is my time. Make that time for yourself and make it count. So if you can do that, I think you will find, you know, it's certainly, that is another one of those things that is a skill that has to be developed over time. It's not an easy thing to do, not by any stretch. So, but try it, you know, make the effort, to give it a shot and see what happens. Dean leaves a comment. Shitty internet will not let him listen in. Sorry, Dean. It'll be available other ways. So, but you've got to compartmentalize and just recognize, yes, it's a skill. Don't expect it to be perfect the first time you try it, but don't give up. Try again, and then tackle those things that are causing the issue. So if it's a relationship issue, talk with the person. If it's a financial issue, sit down with your bank, financial planner, whatever, come up with a plan of attack, you know, a business advisor if you need to, you know, find ways to grow your business, et cetera. You know, there's always a path forward on this stuff. And what you need to do is get those cortisol levels down to a point where you can think rationally about it and come up with a reasonable plan of attack. If you can do that, you're going to be in a good space. And if there's one thing I've learned about people, it's that never underestimate what somebody is capable of when their back's against the wall. And when your stress levels are high, it's because your back is against the wall for some reason. So I think more often than not, people are ready to rise to that challenge, but it can just take them a little while. So hopefully hearing some of this stuff can help you reduce your response time, recognize when you're in one of those, you know, quote unquote crisis situations, and learn to act a little bit quicker. I think it'd be tremendously helpful. So that's pretty much my my diatribe on the topic. So we covered a lot today. A lot of ground. So, you know, if you have questions on anything, if there's topics that you'd like to hear me cover in the future, please fire away. So lots of ways you can get in touch with me now. So let's go over everything here. Website, 5starphysique.com. Email me directly, Darren@5starfitness. I'm on Facebook, facebook.com/5starphysique, where you may be able to watch the video of this live stream as well. My YouTube channel is rising from the ashes also. I don't know what it is, but if you... How pathetic is that? If you search for me on YouTube, you might find me. I don't know. I'll probably post a link to it sometime soon. And what else? Instagram.com/5starfit there. So reach out. Let me know what's on your mind. Go to the website, 5starphysique.com. Vote in the poll that I posted up there. Let's make it happen. So I will leave you to have the best week ever up ahead. Thanks for watching or listening in. And until next week, au revoir.